If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the national newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program, Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. And I think, you're my muse.
Yeah, Bruce. Really?
You really inspire
me.
Yes.
All right. Because?
Because you've been doing this for so long. You are a leader in the community. You are somebody I can look up to as a journalist,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
As an interviewer.
Mm-hmm. No,
wait, you're not handling my performance review, okay. Are you? No. I can stop sucking up now.
Right. It's one of those things where you think, God, what this says is he's old. That's what it says. That's what's in that one. But, when you've been around a long time, you kind of know where the bodies are buried, number one.
Right.
And number two, yeah. Who is the person who is actually making a difference? Who is doing something? So, it's like, and I've said this before, if you're doing an interview with somebody, what you want an interview with somebody who's a celebrity, don't go to the publicist, go to the wife. Because the wife can get you to that person faster than the publicist can. But there are little things you learn along the way. It's kind of little tricks of the trade that you pick up. And it's funny how sometimes you will meet people on the way up that fizzle and or on the way up and they just burst into something really big. And you can catch that somewhere. And I've had those ones in my life. And it's so fun when they remember you years later and they go, oh, Bruce, that kind of stuff is really very, very, maybe the most rewarding part of it because you think it's hit and run. That's what we do most of the time is you interview somebody and then you may never see them again. But sometimes you do come back to those ones and it is interesting to see how they react. And I have some that are real jerks too. And you go, it's like, hello, Newman. It's one of those things. But it's fascinating. And we did track David Risdahl when he was in Fargo. He was, he played, Juno Temple's husband, kind of meek, kind of nothing, not a real spark plug, but certainly key to the story. And it was fascinating. I think we might, even if you go back to an older edition of Stream and Screened, you might find the part of the interview that we did.
Oh, yeah.
But he's now in Alien Earth, and he told me around the time of Fargo that he was going to be in Alien Earth. And he said that Noah Hawley, the creator of both, pulled him aside and said, I want you to be in my next show. And that was this prequel to Alien. And so he just took a leap of faith that the guy was going to be giving him a good part. And it turned out, I mean, this thing is a hit. And he has an important part toward the end of the show, which I find just kind of fascinating because, would you sit around for 6 months in Thailand, I think they shot it, and then wait for your moment to happen? And he says it's a good gig. Because you could watch everybody else and see what they're up to. But he does a little more research than that. He doesn't just, stand at a fake computer and start pounding on keys. He talks to the people in all the other disciplines. So the photographers, he asks them, well, now, what do you want me to do at this point? And he talks to the art directors. What do you think I should be doing with this piece of equipment? And how will I look like I'm best suited to this, or to the director, and should I be listening in on this conversation that's happening in front of me? So there's more to it than just, you know, pounding on keyboards and looking like you're a part of that whole thing.
Right.
And it has also fueled his future, because after he finished doing Alien Earth, he did another kind of AI-related show called Soulmate. That'll be coming out later next year. And in there, it's a man who's very lonely, who is involved in robotics and creates perhaps a companion for himself, and what that all means for you in terms of AI. And he said it's fascinating to look at that whole world. He is now writing a screenplay about AI. And he says, if we stop this before, you know, before it gets too far afield, we then can lead better lives in what the one than the characters are in these films. But So he had a break after they had finished Alien Earth, made another film, and now he's writing on another one that all seem to talk about what is this futuristic world that we'll be facing, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. He's a really strong character actor, in my opinion. I mean, I thought, because he, you know, I wouldn't call it a lead role in Fargo, but he, you know, is very substantial playing Juno Temple. You know, Juno Temple was clearly the center of attention in that season, but he had such a substantial role, and it was a really interesting one where he was kind of, I don't know, almost like meek. You know, he wasn't very, he kind of played that subordinate character, and he was really good in it, and he was really good as that. And I know he's from the Midwest, so it plays into him. And now to move in to this, I didn't even recognize him at first. You know, he's got the beard,
right?
And
right.
He looks to. It's like I'd hear the voice, and it's like, wait, I know that voice. I remember it from somewhere. And I knew he was on the show, but I just couldn't quite put two and two together initially. But, you know, he had that. He was also in Oppenheimer year ago and had a nice supporting role in that, too. It's just he's somebody who you can see coming up over and over again. And you know, you look at you talked about him writing, and you think about, like, who are some of these other character actors who they've been in these parts and then all of a sudden explode into something else? And like Stephen Graham with Adolescence, here's somebody who's been on so many different shows and movies over the years, like The Irishman, Boardwalk Empire. And then he decides to write and produce and create a program, which, you know, it got a ton of Emmy love. So, you know, who knows for David Risdale? Maybe down the road, he's going to be somebody like that, too, who
always works.
Started off small, but always works. But he's always got these like small but impactful roles, I guess I would put it that way.
Well, in Alien Earth, he's kind of paired with Essie Davis, who plays Dame Sylvia. Are you familiar with her? She looks a little older, right? And they sat down and created this whole backstory that we have no clue as to what it was to help them play their characters. Now, could you imagine doing it? I mean, it's not my career, so I don't know that that will help you. But you would think, all right, if this person had been in prison for 5 years, maybe they would react differently in this situation, or how they would react around those aliens that they've got in all these beakers and glass aquariums and whatnot. And so would they be more comfortable around them, or would they be scared of them like I would be? You know, how do they play that? And they talked it all out before they even started shooting. The thing was shot in order. So, you know, if there's like this kind of fear factor that has to escalate, they didn't have to go back and think, now today is today the day I'm supposed to.
Right.
You mean? I once talked to Glenn Close about what she does with a script, and she said she scores it like she was doing a musical thing. And she says, I have all these colored pens, and I will write down, okay, at this point, you are supposed to be mean. And you should be like mean at a level, maybe a 7 level instead of a 10. And so when she goes back and looks at the script, because they shoot out of sequence, she can then go, okay, I know where I'm going with this. And that's how I create it. And I think that's the same way with this, although they were able to shoot in sequence. So you could see it build. But and he said the sets were scary, very scary to be on them because they were so big and so exacting that you felt you were actually on a spaceship. That, you know, how do I get out of this, even if I need to? And when he said when they had real life scenes on, you know, outside the set where they were using nature, he said those were the most unpredictable because you didn't know if there was a bird that was going to show up or some other kind of creature, real creature that we see in real life. But the ones that are inside the sets are more controllable because they're run by puppeteers. They're run by, you know, other kinds of technicians in the course of doing a show.
Yeah,
but he did have nightmares. Yeah. He did have nightmares after he had done his big scene in episode 6. So if you go back and you look at episode 6, that's the one where he had nightmares, and you'll see why, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yes, of course. But, you know, I got to say, you know, I haven't seen every episode yet because I'm kind of just watching them week to week as they come out. But I haven't been disappointed. The Rotten Tomatoes critics have given it overall, the score is 95% certified fresh and all that stuff. So it's been good. I know the audience score has been a little bit lower. I've kind of throw that aside in a lot of cases because I think there's a lot of trolling of Rotten Tomatoes at times from the fans where
publicists.
It's not like... Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, on one hand, I think critics can sometimes skew things a little bit too much positively or negatively, you know, if you want to call it groupthink to a degree. But I also think fans can be toxic at times, too. And you'll get that very large, it could be, I'll call it a large minority, you know, that large vocal minority who will just kind of troll Rotten Tomatoes and hate on something, whereas folks that actually like it don't necessarily do it. It kind of goes back to the, you know, people that like what you're doing won't call you to thank you, but the people that want to complain, they're the ones that are the most vocal. So so that popcorn meter is a little bit lower from the fans, but it's still really solid. I think turning this franchise into a TV series has gone well, and I hope, you know, this is gonna bring multiple seasons back in the future. They haven't, I don't think they've announced it, have they?
I know, and I think I can see where they could go. And then you have all these characters, so many characters, that you could even just dive into one of them in terms of what their future was or their past was. I mean, I think there are places you can go with it, so it's not that difficult. Well, would you
And actually, like with Noah Hawley doing an anthology series like he has with Fargo, he can easily turn Alien Earth into an anthology where each season just takes on a different storyline. Like, you know, maybe this is Alien Earth and then season two is Alien something else. Maybe
Mars.
It goes off planet.
Yeah.
Right. Alien Mars or somewhere alien, whatever. Or maybe there's another Alien Earth story to tell, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, here's a snippet of the interview I had with David Risdo. Are you officially Noah's muse?
Oh, wow. What a... I could only hope. I mean, what I think I've played his heart the last two seasons, and I've played him as a father and a loving husband, that part of Noah Hawley. So maybe I'm a muse in that part of him.
Could you see a connection between the two, between Fargo and between Alien Earth?
Our first meeting about Arthur, I said, this guy's kind of like Wayne. You know, there's a mirror image. He loves his work. He loves his family. He believes in what he's doing. And then they have a crisis of faith, both of them. And awful things happen to both of them. And they have to re-examine their place in it all and who they are within their family, within their work.
How far in advance did you get? Did you get to see the whole script or just a little bit? He talked to you about it. How did that work out?
And then he told me what was going to happen with Arthur's arc. So I hadn't read those yet. They hadn't written those yet. There was some sketches, but I knew what was going to happen to him.
Okay. In the early episodes, you were basically just seen standing for a lot of it, where you go, what's he up to? I think there's some trouble that's brewing there.
Yeah.
What do you do in those scenes? Are you like pounding on keyboards or what are you doing?
My least favorite scene as an actor. Every actor wants to, it's like a playing a sports game. You kind of want to take some shots, right? So I knew they were coming, but you also get to just live in that character's skin for a bit and then be a good team partner for your other actors in the scenes. And so I feel like that's what I was doing the first few episodes. And you get a chance to wear the clothes, typing out, see what that feels like through this new person's skin and knowing that your day will come.
Well, you also must have old-timey keyboards so that it matches with the original film.
Right.
I mean, do you look at that stuff and say, what is this? This is like, what year is
it? I was asking the art directors, you're like, all right, so what was your plan on here? What should I be touching? What is this control in this fictional world? And what's lovely is they've all thought about all that stuff. So they're like, all right, this controls this monitor. This is monitoring the hybrid's skeletal system. This is their mind. And so you try to make it as real for yourself as possible. So you're like, all right, I'm going to focus on this over here. And then you're working with the camera team. They're like, it looks a little better if that is happening on this keyboard. So then you're like kind of changing it up so that your face is in a better place, you know, all that stuff. So it's a constant conversation between different departments, but you're all working for the same moment, which should feel authentic.
When you're listening then to somebody else's scene that actually is out in front of your kind of station, what is that like?
You're especially when they're great actors, which they all are on Alien, you just get to stop thinking and go into play mode. Like, I'm just Arthur and we're at work and I'm doing my job and they're having a conversation over there and I'm naturally going to have feelings about what Boy Cavalier is spouting. And so I can just live in it in like a living, you know, that there's like living theater. It's a big thing in New York.
Sure.
And so you get to kind of live in this character without putting too much on it and just reacting naturally as you would. And then being surprised by how you feel. Like I didn't, you know, in these moments that you did not really plan, because you plan for the big, you know, you've tried to always plan without also being spontaneous. But for the big moments, you've thought about that arc. You thought about what's going to happen. But for these small little moments, you're being surprised by all these other actors. And that's the best. You know, you don't want to be planning too much as an actor. Right? And especially with like Timothy Oliphant, that guy doesn't plan anything. He is doing jazz. He's doing improv every time. You have no idea what he's going to do, which I love working with those kind of actors. And I want to do that more as an actor myself, just come in and be that spontaneous. It helps when you're playing a synth versus a concerned human being. But there are characters that allow that. But in general, you get to also watch actors work and steal things from them. Like, we're all, as artists, you're always stealing things. You're like, oh, I love how Tim comes in that free to every scene. Like, I want to try that next time. And then you see if that works for you. Or you're like, I love how Boy Cavalier just puts his feet on the desk. Like, yeah, why couldn't you? You could do that. That's a powerful move. And
would you ever think, I could play that role? Why am I not playing that role?
Oh, Well, you're like, I told Noah, I'm like, I want to play some villains. You put me in this really good guy role. And I love playing good guys, but you always want to be moving forward and playing somebody different. And that will come. I know that will come.
All right, Bruce, thank you for that interview. I'm looking forward to the conclusion of this series, but a little bit sad to see it go at the same time, because that means I'm going to have to look for another show to watch.
Well, you put the investment in and then you think, wait a minute now, it's over, you know?
Right.
So we'll see what happens. It could be
Yeah.
There could be more of it, or it could be next year's big Emmy winner.
There you go. All right. So we'll be coming back soon. You want to talk some upcoming series, right?
Because October is really the month when we see the new shows spill out on network television. So I've already talked to people about those. I've seen most of them. And we can kind of give you a little assessment of what the future holds.
That sounds great. All right. Well, on that note, thank you all for tuning in, and come back next week for another episode of Streamed and Screened.